Welcome to episode 38 of the Storage Unpacked podcast. This week, we catch up with Don Foster, Senior Director of Worldwide Solutions Marketing at Commvault, to talk about backup appliances and Commvault Hyperscale. We had hoped to record this podcast face-to-face at the end of last year, however, calendars didn't align, so we recorded remotely. As a result, the audio is not as good as we'd like. However, the content is great, so on with the podcast. Hi, this is Chris Evans, recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. This week, I'm joined, as usual, by Martin and Gavin. Hi, guys.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
The conversation this week is another guest interview, and we're joined by Don Foster from Commvault. Don is the Senior Director of Solutions Marketing over at Commvault. Do you want to add a bit more to that, Don?
Yeah, sure. Hey, and thanks for having me, Chris. So I run what's essentially a lot of the content creation and some of the messaging that we do at Commvault for the solutions that we sell to our customers. So it's a really fun role and puts us right in the middle of the new technology enhancements and some of the things we're going to talk about today.
So Don, Commvault as a company, as far as I was always aware, was a bed protection company. And obviously I think it's evolved to a bit more than that. Maybe you can just tell us what that evolution has become and then just touch on Hyperscale itself and what that is as a product.
Yeah, absolutely. So to your point, Commvault has evolved and has become one of the industry leading data protection companies that everything from small to medium business to the large enterprise use. It's a very scalable solution. But to your point, we have evolved from once we first started about now, 16 years ago as being, really backup and recovery only to helping customers really identify five key things with their data. And obviously backup and recovery is a key component of that, but we want to help customers know and understand what data they have. Move it, whether it's through protection, through migration, lift and shift operations, leveraging cloud, help them move that data to the right infrastructure, especially as they update and digitally transform how IT is run for them. And then once we do that, we want to help them manage and store and optimize how that data is being held. And that's part and parcel to what Hyperscale helps us do. It gives us that super scalable platform where customers can keep data on premises, move it from one site to another, leverage the cloud, you name it. And then, of course, the fourth key thing we then help customers do is based upon, single files or single objects to entire data centers, help them then recover that data. So at the point in time they need it, whether it's for a business outage issue, for some sort of administrative orchestration issue, help them quickly recover that data. And that allows us then to do the final kind of interesting piece that we've been evolving, and that's really start to use that data protection data and the secondary storage environments that they have to start, driving some smarter, fresh business insights. Start thinking of backup data as actually an asset that you can use to make smarter business decisions or business operations through IT. So that's kind of how we've transformed and changed over the last few years. And Hyperscale becomes a really key component of that because it allows customers to scale with really what are, commodity components, servers, storage, processor, NIC cards, et cetera, and use those to scale out for a very efficient linear performance backend for how they manage their secondary data. And it becomes a key linchpin for providing the performance for recovery and the usage that customers want for access to their data.
Okay, that's great. And obviously we'll get to talk about Hyperscale in a bit more detail when we get further on through the podcast. So we met at Commvault Go last year, and if Jason had been organized, we would have been recording this podcast face to face, but obviously we'll blame him for not sort of setting that out properly. But obviously we decided we would catch up and talk about the appliance model for backup, because it seems to be that appliances are becoming more and more popular as a technology to use rather than building your own solution. So the conversation for today really is to talk about the appliance model and to talk about your platform called Hyperscale. So why don't you just give us a bit of background as to why people are wanting to use the appliance model these days compared to building their own solutions?
Yeah, sure. And I, it's interesting as the appliance model has taken off. It is both very large customers as well as customers more in the small to medium space. They're all kind of turning to the appliance model just because of a lot of the simplicity it provides, not only for designing and building and deploying, but also for really knowing how far things can scale, understanding, kind of the linearity of growth and scale and performance. If you need more scale, more performance, more storage, then you basically add to your appliance modeling. And of course, there's a number of different ways that customers might look at acquiring these type of appliances, specifically for data protection. You've got scale-up models, which are typically an appliance that you can add trays to and it gets more more dense in storage as more disk trays are added to it, as you think it that way. And there's also the scale-out model that isn't just about adding storage. It's about adding storage, compute, networking bandwidth, and really providing a much more sort of broad sense of how you're building what is this data protection or secondary storage environment. So both make sense in customer environments today. Both can be fairly complex to build on your own. And I think that's the primary reason why customers are more in tune of looking at an explicit appliance model and seeing how that can greater speed their ability to capture new technologies and really deliver on their own premises.
So do you think people have really moved away from the idea of wanting to build their storage platform themselves? You know, I used to do that years ago, and we'd spend a lot of time speccing out the hardware and the throughput of the actual server and the network ports and all those sort of things. Do you think people have moved away from wanting to do that?
I guess from my take and what we've seen from some of our very large customers, they haven't fully moved away from it. And what I mean by that is if you give them a program or sort of a framework from which you can build your solutions from. In many cases, a lot of the large organizations have their own partnerships and relationships in place where they can acquire the actual gear, the ASICs, right? The servers, the storage on their own, and they can assemble as long as they have the right software that brings it all together in a really easy to use sort of program and architecture. So it's not full on, hey, I'm going to figure out how to build everything myself, piece part together. It's more of, okay, here's the bill of materials that I would need to run this framework. Here's how it delivers this sort of expectation or outcome. And now myself as a larger customer, I can go ahead and choose the vendors that I feel comfortable with to build that back end to, you know, get that outcome that program can deliver. And that's ultimately what the bigger program of hyperscale is all about from Commvault as well.
Right, so digging down into that in a little bit more detail, operationally, if I was a customer, why would I do this? You know, because there's gotta be some benefit other than just buying a package solution that might be theoretically cheaper or, you know, or rather, maybe it's all about not having to do that design and build. What is it operationally that customers are really interested in saving their time on?
Yeah, so I mean, when done properly, right? Because there's a number of vendors that choose different models for how they do appliances. And from a Commvault perspective, when done properly, it's one vendor that helps you own the hardware, the software, the interconnects of how networking and everything operates between the software and your environment, how storage is utilized. It also is optimized out of the box. So, I mean, you go back into your days of building appliances and storage. You probably remember the days of trying to constantly optimize those environments over time. And it may have taken you 18 months, 24 months to truly get it optimized. In this appliance world, using these pre-built sort of, you know, programs and frameworks, or having that appliance that delivers everything for you from hardware to software all together as one, it's already optimized for what your needs are. And so that's a major benefit for the end user. Less questions on how to get the most out of your solution and more focused on the outcomes.
Yeah, I think I probably wouldn't have deployed an appliance type solution in some of the jobs I was in, probably because I wouldn't have seen them as scalable enough. You know, having looked at this market, as far as I can see, there are two models. There are vendors who are going down the route of building out scale out solutions, and you're seeing that from the newer vendors, perhaps, you know, the startups. And then you're seeing a lot of package solutions, maybe from some of the older traditional vendors. And I'd say personally, by the way, that hyperscale sits somewhere in between. We'll get to that later on. You know, I always wondered whether these solutions were going to be suitable for every environment from small right up to the enterprise.
Yeah, and there's some scenarios where, you know, maybe some of the smaller remote sites, maybe they're not a fit because it's just too costly for what you're trying to achieve. And that's part of the benefits that we give our customers from a Commvault perspective. If you want to choose the appliance or you want to choose maybe a different model that isn't necessarily scale out, we can help you still get those same outcomes and those same benefits, just to making sure we're getting the right solution at the right price point the customer requires as well.
I was going to say, sorry, is that the downside of the appliance model in your mind? I know it's always difficult to get a vendor to admit the downside, but usually there's a compromise when it comes to installing it as an appliance. Is it really the difference is price, or is there functionality loss as well doing it from a software-only perspective?
Yeah, I mean, from our perspective, from a Commvault standpoint, there is no functionality loss. It's just realizing that you basically have those building blocks or that amount of capacity that is specifically, you know, predefined, right? Because you have to own the user experience, not only for the hardware, but for the software. And so you can't give too many choices, or it becomes very hard to control hardware updates, software updates, and everything together to simplify that operational experience. So, you know, the downside there is, to a certain degree, you have to give up some of that want to control on all the software updates and all the firmware updates that occur on the appliance. It can also be seen as a benefit. But the other downside, of course, is that if you only have a need for, say, 10 terabytes or 20 terabytes of back-end storage, it may be cheaper because, in, you know, if you're buying a 32 terabyte appliance, that's the smallest form factor that we make, that 32 terabytes might be cost prohibitive if you've got 15 different remote sites that only need 10 to 15 terabytes of actual capacity. So, you know, those are the things you have to think about as you're looking at the appliance model. Does it really fit the explicit capacity needs that your environment requires?
That's a good sort of lead on to another question I was about to ask. You know, what typically do you see as the standard sort of typical customer for this? Do you see a range? Do you see customers that fit a small, medium, large? Or, is, you know, or could you say it's everything? That sounds like a bit of an open and vague statement, but, you know, it's interesting to try and understand if there's a particular type of customer that seems to suit more than others.
Yeah, sure. I mean, from a, you know, a Commvault product perspective, we would like every customer to adopt our either the Commvault Hyperscale appliance or work through one of our partners like Cisco and the Scale Protect version of Hyperscale on their equipment. The net result, though, is at least the initial goings, what we find is our appliance is primarily something that new customers are looking at right now. A lot of our current customers, they like the idea, they love the idea of the technology. It's great for them for vision and differentiation as they continue to evolve, do their own digital transformation. But at the end of the day, there's still the dollars and cents that you have to make sense of this whole thing with. And in many cases, current Commvault customers, unless they're coming due for a new hardware refresh, they're basically giving us a thumbs up, love the idea and the vision and the direction this is going. However, they're just not ready to buy more capacity or more hardware yet. So that's why we find it's the newer customers that are turning to Commvault, looking for trying to modernize their backup environments, really meet the needs of some of the new digital transformation ideas that kind of the hybrid IT and some of the shifts to the cloud have been driving for customers, but then ultimately still make sure they can have the best backup and the best restore experience for their IT environment as they would expect.
Could we not look at this and say that the industry is trying to sell a solution that includes hardware simply because that gives them an opportunity to sell more to a customer, including making more margin on the hardware, whereas the customer might be able to bought the two pieces separately? You know, what is the sort of, other than the pre-design side of it, what is the value add that the customer can really say they're getting out of taking the whole solution from you?
Oh, you cynic, Chris. You're very cynical there.
I think it's a reasonable question because, you know, at the end of the day, Martin, you know what it's like. You've worked in organizations where you would be happily doing the design. And once you've got that design built the first time round, you know, you're not going to do that on every single time you build out a backup environment. So, you know, there's got to be some real value to it, haven't there?
I think sometimes, well, this is my personal opinion, so I'm going to leap in as a user. I think sometimes software vendors clove their deal in hardware to try and make the software prices look less scary, because often customers look at, say, you want me to pay what for software, and all I'm getting is a piece of digital media or something. I think actually cloving it with hardware cynically is quite a clever move.
There is an aspect of that see, feel, touch, the tangibility of what it is a customer is buying. And I would say I don't think it's about trying to capture more revenue on the hardware side. I think it's more back to making it no longer the customer's concern or the customer's duty to understand that as hardware improves, it seems like every 6 months Intel or AMD is issuing a new server chip with a new chipset with better performance. And with that, there come operating system changes. And with that come new storage changes. And with that come new ways that you can leverage technologies like Flash. And what we have found, and I think this is really why the software-hardware combination makes so much sense, is that if the vendor can own what that experience has to be and provide what the outcome of all these things coming together on a predictable, you know, release pattern, meaning, okay, hey, we know a new chipset's coming up from this server vendor that provides this sort of capability that aligns with the operating system parameters. Here's the new benefits in speed or scale breadth of coverage that you now get as a customer. That takes a whole lot of design, implementation, and planning away from the end user. And it allows some of the skill sets, which we find a lot of large enterprise customers and even the mid-sized customers, they're starting to have some skill gaps issues in having people that can truly understand down to the architecture design nuts and bolts pieces for their data how to build these solutions, right? It's no longer as easy as it once was. So they're looking for ways to just give us something that's pre-built and packaged that has the software and hardware optimized out of the box. And ultimately then, you'll probably, speaking from a Commvault perspective, we're not trying to to really make money by selling hardware to our customers. We want them to use the software technology to really enable the smartest, easiest use of their data so they can ensure their data center is protected, and more importantly, get some value back from that data, not only in how they restore it, but drive other opportunities like development and test or disaster recovery, you name it.
So Martin, it sounds like we're a dying breed of people who like to design and build their own solutions.
I think we probably are. I think it's very much a case that design and build yourself in general is not going anywhere now. I mean, we're just not doing it. And I quite like this approach. I was thinking about this over the weekend. I mean, there's more and more I'd like to buy off the shelf. It allows me to do things faster and worry less about nuts and bolts, I'm afraid.
I enjoy working on things like cars and engines, but man, it's a whole lot easier to get a high-performing engine from someone that's preset and built versus trying to figure it out on my own, right?
I think that's true as long as that you're not being tied into taking things in a certain rigid format. So if you look at the way that cloud has been promoted to us, in public cloud, you take what the vendor gives you and that's it. The issue I can see with predefined appliances is that you could be pushed into something where the appliance is a certain size and you've got to move up to another one, and the next one might be huge compared to the one you have today. So you know, there might not be that scalability, or there might be the overpaying for a solution you might not necessarily need that full capacity with.
There has been a case of this with some of the other appliance makers where it's not necessarily about a sudden building block leap. It's those building blocks aren't there, so they're not a lot of them aren't necessarily designed for very large environments. So you find that you end up with a very fragmented environment. You end up putting lots of appliances in. So almost like, let's take it right back. Everybody loved their first NetApp. Everybody hated their 10th. With some of the appliance vendors in this space, you are at that risk.
Yeah, I think that's why you say you made the comment earlier, Chris, that hyperscale from Commvault is maybe an in-between the scale up and scale out, in that it really gives customers the ability to really define to a large scale on that scale out side. I think if you think about what scale out solutions mean, it's not like you have 10, you know, on the, you know, your 10th NetApp or your 10th NAS of whomever the vendor might be. It usually meant that's your 10th management point that you have to somehow integrate into all of your other existing processes that usually had some manual steps behind it. I think what we find, what we're doing with hyperscale, our appliance is primarily meant for that sort of remote office, branch office for our customers. And what we're doing with partners like Cisco and others with the hyperscale framework is giving them the ability to go into that multi-petabyte, tens of petabytes level of scale with a solution that is truly centrally managed, and it's almost like a living, breathing organism in that it can grow linearly with more performance, more availability of what storage is there, and we can leverage those resources as necessary per the customer need. If they have to recover multiple hundreds of terabytes of data, we can allow them to use that level of networking and processing and spinning disk and flash to bring everything back as fast as possible. So I think that's kind of where things are a little bit different, and the ability of understanding that our customers need multi petabyte scale really does make hyperscale from a program or from a framework and a technology a little bit different than maybe some of the upstarts that first kind of came to the market with these hyperconverged and scale out storage solutions for backup.
Let's talk about your solution in a bit more detail, and let's dig that into that. And let's talk first of all about that idea of hyperscale and how that's actually delivered, because, and I know a bit of background, by the way, so that I think it's worth me just saying that I'm obviously, I was in the room when you presented this, so I should remember some of it, which would be, you know, but it's a bit stupid if I didn't. The one thing that I noticed in your architecture was that there is an underlying file system that's spread across all of the nodes that you deploy, and that's quite a common feature we see in some of the more in the scale out solutions today.
Correct. Yeah, so if you think about the makeup, first, let's just talk about the hardware. In our appliance, we do work with a server vendor. It's Fujitsu is the server vendor that is the back end for our appliance. What we basically have there are 2U servers from Fujitsu based upon the storage sizes that will range anywhere from 32 terabytes, basically up to, it's just under 80 usable when you do the base 2 to base 10 conversion, but it's basically from 32 to 80, you know, before you worry about that conversion of the base on the available terabytes for each appliance. That appliance is, of course, three of those 2U servers that give you that capability. So from there, under the covers, there is flash storage, there is spinning disk storage. Obviously, there's CPU memory and whatnot, networking that basically links these appliances together. And then, of course, under the covers in the software, you have Commvault. And to your point, you mentioned the file system. We actually have Red Hat. So they're all running Linux, and we're running Red Hat Linux under the covers to basically be the back-end basis for how these things are grown. And instead of creating or trying to black box open source technology, over the last year or so, we've been working together jointly with Red Hat to take their Gluster file system, GFS, to provide that scale out capability at multiple levels of petabyte scale, depending on the hardware that we choose. So that as we can add more nodes, just like in a general GFS configuration, it'll basically assimilate those new resources and expand the level of that namespace for where data can be written. So that same sort of technology is applied inside of Hyperscale. As you add nodes, we do add them basically 3 nodes at a time. And that allows us to go, like I say, from the appliance, we would go from that, call it roughly 80 terabyte usable to 160 by having 2 appliances working side by side. And really what happens is those 2 appliances almost act as one now, where they have 6 servers that now act as one. Same sort of idea applies even in the Hyperscale framework. So whether we're talking Cisco servers, HP servers, white box servers that you as a customer want to utilize, as long as you follow the bill of materials and framework that we outline in our Hyperscale program, customers can build these to their spec and get that multi-petabyte level of scale. So the fact that GFS today supports 128 of these together, knowing that in, for example, a Cisco 3000 series server that you can get pretty darn close to 400 terabytes of usable storage, you can start to see, you tie 3 of those together and go up to 128, and you can really start to see the level of potential capacity that the customer could actually leverage.
What does the customer need to know about the underlying file system then? Is it 100% managed in terms of fault tolerance and everything else by the software, so they never have to see that? Is it like so far under the covers that it's sort of kept away from them?
So it is. It is absolutely kept away from them. For the fault tolerance, we have erasure coding built in. So there's erasure coding for the fault tolerant capability, not only of the data that we write inside of the drives, but same thing from the nodes. So the way we've done the erasure coding, you can use one node, you can lose one node and some drives, and you can still have the solution up and running. And it's basically a 4+2 erasure coding setup that we have. That basically means, hey, we can run off of 4 basic drives and 2 nodes, and we'll still have the same level of availability for our customer. So that erasure coding is built in. The updates that are being run for Red Hat are all encapsulated as a part of the actual appliance itself, so the customer doesn't have to worry about doing the OS updates. We do that ourselves through our automated patch management and updating that we do to systems. So they can definitely, if they wanted to crack into it and look at the kernels and do things, they could, but like I say, it comes optimized out of the box. Installation, whether it's through our appliance or through one of our partner vendors, is incredibly simplified. Again, it's one of those things that you power it on, ISO boots, and it's off and running. So we try to make that as simplified as possible, where customers just enter in their DNS naming, their IP addresses, and they're off and running with the implementation.
So, silly question, but have you had to patch for the Spectre meltdown incidents or the vulnerabilities, and what have you seen as a result of that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Have we had to work with Red Hat to patch for that? Yes, we have. Where we stand on what the outcomes of it, I actually don't have a response for you on that one at this moment. We know that Red Hat is issuing patches and that stuff has been handled. We've rolled those into some of our service pack updates. Those occur once a quarter for customers on the official roll-up. I do believe we have some hot fixes that are in place as well, but I can get more detail for you guys on that post this, and we can have the full detail on how we've managed that.
Sure, but they would go out as part of your maintenance. That's
correct.
You would recommend to the customer and you would say to them, this is something you need to take.
Correct. It would be like a critical hot fix that we would put out, like we would put out for our software in the past. It would be something that we would release and notify our customers. And of course, we would understand who has Hyperscale installed, and they would get the notice and the action for what they should do to ensure they've got proper patching to download those hot fixes or to have them automatically downloaded for them.
I would assume that you're having to heavily test these, because it's one of the things which is getting badly impacted is IO. And underlying file systems. So some dramatic differences depending what file system you're using in under Red Hat as to what performance you're going to see and how much performance drop off you see. So yeah, I think it's going to be a bit of an interesting time for you guys.
Yeah, it's an interesting time when you start thinking about security and trying to keep things locked down. At the end of the day, it ends up putting more load on the software that's trying to ensure that the way the writes are being handled are secure. And we've done a fantastic job as a company of having very few security vulnerabilities for our customers. So you're right, it's going to continue to be a challenge. And even once we get this challenge, once we're past it, I'm sure we'll have another one or two that will come right behind it shortly thereafter.
So if I'm an existing customer then, and you're coming along to me and saying, oh, put my appliance in, it's a much better way of working going forward, How does that work for a customer who might have a lot of investment already in Commvault that might want to work out how to actually migrate onto an appliance-based platform? From a number of aspects, one the technical one, one the financial. How would that work in your instance?
Yeah, sure. So from a technical perspective, it's actually really easy. So you can actually install hyperscale appliances together with some of the scale-up or typical storage solutions that you've used with Commvault. And over time, as you want to move workloads from one to the other, we make it very easy for you to basically just shift your workloads to a new storage target. It's the benefit of using Commvault. It's very easy to refocus new backups, new workloads, and focus them directly to the hyperscale appliances. If a customer wants to do a wholesale shift, it's, again, a really simple process to update the policies. It's basically a couple mouse clicks for a customer to update their policies, to point everything now to the hyperscale appliances, and then it's a back-end copy process that allows us to basically lift and shift data off of the aging current Commvault implementation, and then stick them inside of the hyperscale appliance. So, perfect example, if I've got customers at remote sites, they can decide to install an appliance at remote sites. They can maybe build their own through the reference architecture program in the main data center and slowly migrate workloads as they see fit as they roll out, because Commvault will support and basically manage all of them across the globe based on the way our architecture and our services work. So that makes things fairly easy there. On the cost perspective, it's just a matter of buying the capacity, so paying for the appliance or buying the capacity on the software side, together with the hardware that you're running it from if you're doing it in a reference architecture. And as you basically pay for the hyperscale capacity, you're then able to implement that and have your solution running. It's really not too difficult to do in either case, and it just boils down to how you want to scale your solution.
Let's talk about potentially the cloud then, because one of the things that comes out here, I think, is that obviously you're looking at appliances as the route forward to move away from what would be, say, software only, which seems to sort of be against what we would see in terms of how we work with the cloud. How does that work with public cloud? That are you likely to do a virtual version of the appliance? How can customers sort of tie up their cloud and their on-prem stuff together?
Yeah, so because Commvault supports all of the public cloud entities and storage and multiple levels of their storage, while you could potentially build a hyperscale solution on the compute, flash, and spinning disk that you would find in like an Amazon or an Azure, it's probably not as cost-effective as if you were to simply use those native storage capacities with the Commvault software as we support them today. So you absolutely could, but paying for that persistent CPU, spinning disk, flash storage, etc., will probably get pretty costly just on the infrastructure cost from the cloud partner than if you were to use Commvault as we do today and leverage our native integrations to ensure the right data is being stored to the right technology location. So, be it S3, be it S3 cold storage, or even be it all the way out to something like Glacier. We're not pushing for our customers to run our software or a hyperscale reference architecture in cloud resources, because it's just going to be too costly for them to have the necessary resources that they want to run that solution.
So does that mean you're not likely to offer anything that covers the cloud requirement, or are you saying that you'd say you'd do that on premises and back the data out of the cloud onto an on premises solution?
No, what we would do is we would actually use a similar method to what we have today with Commvault data movers. So we call them a media agent, and that media agent can directly write to any storage anywhere in the cloud as it sees fit. So object storage, block storage, you name it. So instead of trying to build a hyperscale appliance virtually in the cloud, we would just simply utilize our orchestration to fire up that machine that would be the data mover, that would have the instant communication to S3 storage or Azure Blob or the spinning disk storage. And instead of using hyperscale, essentially you're already built on a hyperscaled technology that the cloud has deployed. So let Commvault then utilize that infrastructure with the native integrations that we've already built for writing data into the storage and allow us to manage it that way. You're basically just adding more complexity if you were to have a cloud version hyperscale appliance running in the cloud, when the data mover itself can provide the customers the level of access, recoverability, and long-term storage they would want just by running our virtual machine media agent data mover there.
Okay, so you're just saying you just run a normal virtual machine with the software inside that rather than build out a hyperscale version of that?
That's correct. It would be more efficient and more cost-effective and deliver the same value because of the infrastructure it's built from.
But a customer could still have the same level of interaction with a hyperscale solution. So, you know, say I was moving stuff around in that environment and some of my stuff was hyperscale, some of it was an appliance. I wouldn't have a worry about interoperability.
Benefits of Commvault. No worries of interoperability or moving data from on-premises to the cloud or vice versa back.
Just sort of wrapping that side of things up. How is it licensed? Is it purely on a cost basis?
Yeah, so the hyperscale component itself, you can buy that. So if you're a brand new customer, you can buy the appliance that comes with basically the ability to support all the applications, OSs that Commvault supports, virtual machines, etc. That all comes together as a part of a software and hardware combined cost from Commvault for the appliance if you're a brand new customer. And you're basically licensed for whatever the terabytes of that appliance is scaled to. So if it's roughly 80 terabytes, you have 80 terabytes of capacity that you can protect whatever is inside of your environment. And that cost is on par to what, you know, many of the call it the new players with their scale-out appliances are in the marketplace today. And of course, it scales down as you go down in size. If you're a current customer, you can just buy the hyperscale-only add-on and obviously whatever hardware you want to leverage your current capacity modeling, et cetera. And it allows those licenses to work, you know, harmoniously together to provide that solution technology. The cost, I don't have the list cost off the top of my head, but for any customers that are interested, you can reach your local Commvault partner, your Commvault sales rep, and it's a conversation we'd love to get in and kind of understand what your goals are and what that cost metric looks like. It's really not too much more expensive if you're a current customer to add hyperscale to your already defined capacity license agreement.
Okay, well, that was great. Thanks, Don. So that sort of sets the scene for hyperscale as it is today. Where do we see the future going with appliances in general? And I don't necessarily mean just hyperscale. I mean, where do we think the industry will head in the future?
So I do think that this trend of appliances and sort of the convergence of software and hardware technology will probably become more and more prevalent, especially in some of the areas of, you know, you think about data movement, you think about some of the as-a-service offerings. If you're going to keep things on-premises, I do believe that we're going to see that the appliance form factor, whether it's kind of that pseudo-build-your-own, here's the bill of materials framework you want to run from, or whether it's an actual hardened appliance that a provider provides to you, I do think that that's the direction that many of these solutions are going. And that's primarily because customers want outcomes. So I know at Commvault, we understand that. We're focused on continuing to stay, obviously, up to speed on some of the hardware changes that are occurring, making sure that we're linking those together with our software, providing that level of optimization and scale. But then more importantly, tying some of the really neat sort of API frameworks, some of the interesting technologies like AI and machine learning, linking in some of the analytics detail of how data could be used, but better understanding what's protected, at what age, what level of integrity, et cetera, it's been stored. That's where we see these appliances for data protection specifically becoming more valuable, because once you start to have a really smart and kind of software stack that drives some of that intelligence, then it becomes really easy to start delivering some of the more advanced outcomes beyond just fast backup and fast restore, in an easy to use form factor to, great, I want that fast backup and restore in the easy to use form factor that can also deliver on the outcomes of knowing my information better, speeding sort of innovation cycles faster, et cetera.
So we're talking about just getting more value out of the data that we're storing in the first place, I guess.
You got it.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, it's been great to talk to you, Don. Thank you very much for joining us. And hopefully that was really useful for people. If people want to find you personally, where can they stalk you? Are you on Twitter at all?
Yeah, absolutely I am. They can get me on Twitter at dfoster_jr. And I'm also on LinkedIn as well. So both places, feel free to follow me on both those spots. I'm pretty active on the Commvault blogs as well, so feel free to visit our website and follow some of the Commvault blogging that we do.
That's great. I'll dig out the website links for that and add it to the podcast. Thanks for joining us, and talk to you soon.